Welcome. This is Christopher Holmes, and this is the Zero Point Radio Show through BBS Radio. Every second Saturday, we're on and have been for 5 years now. I'd like to extend a Happy New Year to all the listeners. We're facing challenging times, and this is going to be a very interesting and dynamic, important year. I think so much truth is coming out so widely that hopefully this year we can start to turn the tide and start having these truths come out and start taking control back of our countries and our health care and our societies. Western people in Western society, we have been so badly deceived through the last decades about what's been going on in our society. It is as if we've all been asleep, and now the people are awakening and kind of realizing what's happened. In a sense, while we were sleeping, they came and stole it all away. We almost have a mass delusional system, in my view. It's really a delusional system that has been intentionally fostered among the public about what's really going on in the world now and through history. So hopefully this year will be a year of a great awakening and the spreading of truth through the world and the awakening of people's hearts. And that's the main teaching of the Zero Point series, is that in mystical teachings about the nature of existence, our true being center is within our own hearts. In a sense, that is where an individual has his real I, a singular I, or self. In Judaism, it is said the truth is under our noses all the time. And the Sufi mystic goes searching for God, and he can't find him in the pagodas and in the temples and in the synagogues. And then finally he finds God within his own heart. So the main concept of the Zero Point Radio is that we ourselves have a higher dimensional nature to our hearts. We're not simply physical beings, but we're beings out of more subtle or higher dimensions, and we are embodied. We are spiritual or divine beings, and we are embodied into the physical being. And that dynamic or process occurs through the heart and the higher dimensional physics of the human heart. Through my life, I've struggled to understand the issues of human consciousness because I'm a psychologist and I was interested in psychotherapy and how to help people uncover things from the unconscious and help make them more conscious and then to become self-conscious or to attain self-consciousness. In the mystical traditions, what people think their self is more their egoic or personality nature, but not their true, hidden, or mystical self. And that is what is connected to the heart. Krishna says, "I am the self seated in the hearts of all beings." And we find this teaching of the heart throughout the different religious and mystical teachings of humankind. So this year, then, I think we have to have courage, which term comes from French for la cour, meaning, and it suggests having a new heart. So I think we have to have courage to face the times we're living in. And we all need to consider our lives and what's important to us. And remember, in a way, the most important thing is in life, from my perspective, is our attaining of our soul, as Gurdjieff would describe it. That a human being although in a way we all have a soul, but in a sense we have to attain that soul by developing the higher being bodies for the life of the soul. And people, in a way, can lose their soul or not attain their soul. So in the Gurdjieff teaching, this is the what's most important within our lives. And Gurdjieff suggests that if we can attain our souls, we can attain these different levels of immortality. A complex teaching. Mystical teachings, as we've elaborated them through the last years on this program, we've been trying to explain the mysteries of consciousness and this idea that the heart is our true center rather than the mind in the head. We've talked about consciousness as light, consciousness as no-thingness, and similar to space. So we're trying to understand these mysteries of consciousness and creation. And we'll continue again through 2011 to pursue these issues. At the same time, as we pursue and discuss other relevant things happening in our societies. Okay, so we have two guests on today's show, one in the first half, and then we'll take a break for five minutes at the end of the first half, and then a second guest in the second. But first I'll introduce my co-host, James Moffat, from Toronto, Ontario. Jim, how are you?
Oh, I'm well, thanks, Chris. How are you?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Happy New Year, Jim.
Yeah, thanks to you too.
You know, the last show, I had a Christmas show last week, but prior to that, we had started out in the Gurdjieff Uspensky material, and we're going along in that. And we went off course a little bit, and I do want to get back to that and into this new year to follow up our intention to explore Beelzebub's tales. Are you hearing a bad buzz or interference on your phones?
I'm not. There's a little bit of static, but not a lot.
Okay, good. Okay, that's good because I'm hearing it very loudly. So we will come back to Beelzebub over the next weeks, and I think that'll be a really interesting series. Have you had any time, Jim, to be working at?
I just began rereading Beelzebub. I missed the last two programs. I wasn't on the Christmas program, and I wasn't on the program on the before that too because I was sick.
So, oh yeah, I had Calvin on. About chemtrails and such.
Oh,
yeah,
it's been quite a while since yeah.
Yeah.
I'm reading. I don't know if I ever mentioned this to you. I think I did. I may have actually mentioned it on the program, but in October I bought Consciousness Beyond Life, The Science of the Near-Death Experience by Dr. Pim van Lommel.
Wow.
Who's a Dutch cardiologist who has done a long-term study of near-death experience people and compared them with a control group of other cardiac patients. And I've just read the first 50 or so pages of the book, but 60 pages, boy, it's ever interesting what he's saying. He's essentially arguing against the position that that consciousness is produced in the brain, and his collection of materials. He kind of goes through the major other works on the near death experience, and selects out sort of the different protocols and elements that have been established by the other major researchers like Kenneth Ring and Raymond Moody and you know the various people that over the years that have looked at this. And it's very interesting, and then he substantiates a lot of things with these different accounts, but boy, I don't know how anybody who looks at this with an open mind couldn't come to see this as I see this more and more how important this is in terms of the position that we're trying to articulate and that you've developed over many years derived from mystical and esoteric teachings. Everything in here is entirely consistent with that viewpoint and entirely inconsistent with, impossible in terms of the materialist, the dominant paradigm of the materialist position on consciousness. I see this more and more. I see how important this this work is, and you have to get this book and read this book, Chris. I think you'll be very, very interested in it.
Yeah, excellent. Does he never considers the Hart doctrine viewpoint as a possible alternative or view?
I don't know, because I haven't read that far. But he's certainly looking for some other sort of explanation. So
consciousness.
As a cardiologist, it would be very interesting to hear what he would have to say about that. Interestingly, too, yesterday, I just happened to meet the person who bought your copy of The Hart Doctrine at Book City, the bookstore that in
Toronto. Oh, yeah.
And I talked to her, and because she's a friend of a friend, and she asked me a very interesting question. She said, "Do you know of any work in which anybody talks about the evolution of the heart?"
Wow.
I don't. Do you?
Well, I'm sure there are studies likely in as a specialty, but no, I mean, I've never heard of that, no.
Yeah, because...
No,
I mean,
it's really interesting.
There's quite a lot of material on the evolution of the brain, especially with the development of the neocortex, and people built all sorts of theories and explanations around that, but I thought that was a very interesting question.
Yeah, it is. It's something worth pursuing and investigating, like going out and looking for material on that. Yeah.
I thought that would appeal to you, because I thought, gee, what a good question. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's so useful. If you have the perspective we have, then it's so interesting reading other people's materials, how it just enriches your own viewpoint, plus you can see their errors and misconceptions at times. It's so valuable, you know. It's like you have a measure, a way of judging things, in a sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so, well, I'll try to get that book, and we'll do a future show on that.
Yeah, I think it would be very worthwhile,
Okay, so we have a guest for the rest of this hour, and I'd like to introduce him. And several years ago, I became involved in Ottawa with the Ottawa 9/11 Truth Group, and I occasionally have been out with them, and they go out the 11th of every month in downtown Ottawa and give out DVDs about 9/11 truth and just the enigmas about the towers and trying to wake the public up to the importance of this 9/11 issue, which has never been dealt with in our society. And these people, these fellows and women, they go out regularly and faithfully, and the last time they were out, they gave out, well, I thought at one point 911, or I think they actually gave out 1,000 DVDs in downtown Ottawa to people. And now this group, the Ottawa 9/11 group, has a new project. And I have a guest here today who's going to outline that for us. And this fellow, David Long, was also in New York City on the day of 9/11, and will share with us some of his experiences of that day. Thank you very much for joining us, David.
Thank you. That was a great intro, and I just want to apologize in advance. It's Saturday afternoon, and I'm here at home, so you may hear my little son running around in the background there.
Oh, that's sweet. That's nice. That's nice to hear a child's glee.
Well, you're going to hear it, so I'm just I'm trying to shoo him out of the office here, but he's having a good old time, so we're just going to go with it.
Yeah.
In your intro, you were referring to the 9/11 on 9/11 campaign, which we did in September. And, we gave out 911 CDs, possibly more, I heard, at the end, actually. And it turned out to be a really, really nice day. And people were snapping them up. We thought it would take 6 hours, and it was much less than that. So that proves, over 900 times, we gave people information about what was going on, and they didn't walk away and tell us we were crazy or anything like that. People just were snapping them up. Over 900 times. So, you know, that's got to tell you something.
And my experience, the few occasions I've been out with you, is that most people are aware of it.
Yeah.
Would you not say the majority? I mean, some people can't deal with it at all. Like, you can just see how closed and set they are in a way. And other people get angry a bit. But the majority of people, I think, are aware that there are so many unresolved, that it was a fraud to be here.
Yeah, I was at the bank just yesterday, and I was just chatting with the woman behind the counter while I was doing some banking, and I just happened to mention this. I wasn't giving out DVDs or anything like that, and she said, "Yeah, Tower 7, you know, knew all about it." this happens all the time now. And I can tell you, when I go out to the Truth Actions, I have the same feeling every time. It's not easy to walk up to a complete stranger or have a complete stranger walk up to you and start a conversation about anything, right? And I'm going to go stand there for 2-3 hours and do this. So, you know, every time I'm going out to do this, I'm asking myself questions like, why am I doing this? You know, do I have to? I'm telling myself everything that I can to reinforce myself, to get myself to go and do this. It's just like when we make New Year's resolutions, we want to go to the gym, and we say, oh, yeah, we're going to go to the gym, but, you know. So what I'm saying is it's hard before you go to the Truth Action, and I'm recognizing that people have a hard time talking to each other about anything, and about this topic is twice as hard. But here's what happens, and this is the amazing thing. Within the first minute or two, I'm standing there with the sign, and the first person comes by, and I'm all full of tension, and I'm nervous, and then they see the sign, or they ask me what I'm doing, and I say, well, I'm just here giving out CDs about 9/11 truth. We want people to know what happened. You know, I change my intro a little bit, but that's basically what I say. And they're like, wow, thank you, and they walk on. And then the next person comes, and they go, oh, cool, right? And then the next person, oh, yep, thank you. You know, and it's like little old ladies, busy men, teenagers, every kind of person that you could pick up, think of, from teenager to 80 years old. I mean, we were there. We even gave a DVD once to former Prime Minister Joe Clark. He was walking by.
Really?
That doesn't happen all the time, but, I mean, we've given our DVDs out to some very interesting people, and Joe took a DVD. So the point of that is that people talking about this, it's going on. The public knows about it, and they're very accepting of it. I've conducted that little test to see what people think about this hundreds of times personally, and as a group, Truth Action Ottawa, we've done this over 12,000 times. And occasionally, and I'm talking like maybe it's less than 1 in 100, somebody gets angry and says, what are you doing? But even then, all they do is shake their head and walk away. The majority of people know about the truth about what happened. So that's what I'd say.
I mean, I don't think people understand at all the implications of it and what's all behind it. That's the problem. I agree. I think the majority of people know that there was something untowards or suspicious about the whole thing, but they don't really grasp who did it and what that means about our own government and about the media and this public deception that's been allowed.
And, you know, I don't either. Like,
yeah,
I know what I know what I saw, and I know that there are huge implications. Like, even when I think about, okay, so I know that these buildings were brought down with explosives. It's hard to say, but, you know, that's what I know. But then if I break that apart and I think, well, what would it take to do that type of an endeavor? You're talking about a huge effort. I mean, the planning that went into that was enormous. So who is capable of doing so? You know, and it goes on and on and on. But, you know, I'm just an eyewitness. I don't really know what the reasoning is behind that. I mean, I can I could put some guesses. I think, you know, it's probably to do with economics. I think that somebody made money off this. Beyond that, we're all in the dark. And I think that's one of the difficulties in our movement, is that because there's never been a proper investigation, in the sense where people could look at the evidence, shocking though it is, and say, well, that's the truth. Now there's nothing else to discuss. There's so many different areas of theory in the 9/11 truth movement, and none of us really have much to go on. Sometimes people come forward with different opinions. Some of them, to me, sound outlandish, but other ones sound quite plausible. Well, we argue amongst ourselves in the truth movement about what's going on. We're all convinced something's going on, but
At
the end of the day, how are we gonna settle this debate? It has to be settled, I think, because it's not getting smaller; it's getting bigger. And I think it's time for the governments everywhere in every country to say, our population, the majority of people, are asking questions about this, and the time's got to come where we're going to have to help out our people and say, here's what we know. Quite likely the United States government would be the last one on the list, but there are many other countries that could start doing what we're doing here in Canada, which is...
My own belief is that the government knows very well who did it, and that there is overwhelming evidence as to who did it. But I think it's most valuable that what your group asks for is, we want this taken into a court of law and the evidence is brought out. And I think that's, there is so much accusation and generalities thrown around that's not in a way useful. If we could get it into a court of law and let it unravel as it would unravel, and that's what your group asks for, and you don't go out saying it's this group or that group, you're just kind of trying to demand of our government accountability and their responsiveness to the people of Canada, who have a right. I mean, it's our troops now who are dying in Afghanistan because of this. So it's had huge implications for our society, as well as all their terrorist measures and so on. So we have a right as citizens to demand this impartial justice.
I think we do. I've looked at this recently because I've looked at the procedure required to bring a petition to Parliament. And part of our system, our parliamentary system, allows for citizens to bring complaints, what they're actually called in the parliamentary language as a prayer. You're allowed to bring those to the government humbly and respectfully, and we have a process for doing that. That's exactly what we're doing. I don't know if other countries have this exact type of thing, but I would imagine they have something similar, and they people in their own countries should start to do this as well. You brought up a good point. Sorry, you had a question?
So now you have the petition, and you have the final form of it, and that's made available on your website?
That's correct. It's truthactionottawa.com/petition. And we have the original signed copy from the Clerk of Petitions there. And very shortly we'll be posting the PDF files, so page 1 and page 2. And anybody would do if they want to take part is print out copies of page 2. They have to get original signatures. We cannot hand in photocopies. They have to be original. And they just mail it to the address on the Truth Action website, and we will hand in the petition on in September of 2011.
Wow, that's excellent. And in a way, it would be really good if there were other 9/11 groups across Canada, other people who might pick up, and there's no reason that only your group can submit this, is there? Like any group across Canada that wants to help in that could be useful.
Yes, and one of the requirements is that a member of Parliament reads it and agrees to read it. So it could very well be that a member of Parliament in Vancouver or Charlottetown, or might be the right person to read it. There's several hundred members of Parliament. So it could come from any constituency in Canada, not necessarily ours. Obviously, Truth Action Ottawa is in a unique position because being in Ottawa, we're here in the nation's capital, so it's fairly easy to contact members of Parliament. That was one of the motivating factors behind why I thought it would be good to start this here. But that doesn't mean that that we're running the show in any way. This can be taken up, and we've made it very simple. There's some forms you download and a address that you mail the printed copies to, and that's it. But this could be taken up, and it's meant to be taken up by every Truth Action group, every 9/11 group, even individuals all across Canada, and that's what's happening now.
And you've also been in contact with architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. You had Richard Gage to Ottawa, and you, in the early copy of the petition, you cite their evidences as like a primary source of the criminal evidences. Is that still in the petition as it in its final form?
In drafting the petition, we selected architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth because their evidence is so compelling that there is a horse race. Of all the different theories about what happened on 9/11, and especially the different components of the theories, for example, what happened with the FAA, what happened with NORAD, what actually did happen at the Pentagon, what really happened in Shanksville. The aspect of the problem that we chose to concentrate on were the Twin Towers and Building 7, because that's the one that had the greatest and most compelling body of research done by scientists. And in writing the petition, we knew that on the day that it's read, it'll be looked at by politicians who, when it goes ahead, we'll hand it to experts in the Canadian government to review. So we wanted to make sure that we had the first and foremost expert representing the body of the 9/11 Truth Group, and that person is clearly Richard Gage. So that's why we wrote that, and it's literally written into the petition. It says we ask and pray that you meet with Richard Gage, amongst other things, to make it very clear that when we're saying there are problems with the official story, we're saying exactly what the problems are. And we put that very clearly into the petition, too. One point to concentrate on, I am conscious that there are so many other valid and important things that need to be looked at, but you are limited to one page, or you have to keep it very brief in the petition. So at the end of the day, this is what we decided to go with.
Yeah, I think it's very valuable, and the architects and engineers have the same attitude. They're simply asking for an inquiry, and they don't postulate who was involved or approach that. And I think that's really valuable.
Yes.
Jim, did you have any comments, or did you... We saw Richard Gage there in Toronto. That was quite an evening. Eh? He really filled that large hall. There must have been over 1,000 people there.
Yeah, it was very fascinating when we saw Richard Gage and David Ray Griffin speak together. It's the second time I've heard David Ray Griffin speak, there were a number. Gage did a poll at the beginning of the audience, and he asked how many engineers and how many architects were there, and there were a lot of engineers. Like Chris, I think about 25 or something like that.
Yeah.
And 17 or 18 architects, I believe. And he broke it down by different groups of people and polled them at the beginning and asked them if they accepted the official story. And at the end, I think there was one engineer that did still maintain that the official story, and everybody else was either converted or reaffirmed that they didn't believe the official story. It's quite a powerful presentation. I wanted to ask David, though, that...
I want to know what oil company or who was paying the salary of that one engineer
That guy worked for? Yeah, exactly. A couple of things. Chris mentioned that something about going before the courts, but you're saying going before Parliament, eh? Because that's quite radically different. So you want to submit this to Parliament, but do you have any target members of Parliament that you think might be willing to read your petition in?
I don't want to say right now, because okay. we've made some requests to okay. members of Parliament, two of them, and they're on holidays right now. They've got their break until the end of January. But I can tell you that the offices we've spoken to have been very receptive, and the tone has been excellent. So I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt, and I would imagine that as long as we conduct ourselves in a business-like manner, they will do the same. But I formally made requests in writing to two MPs, and I'd like to give them the opportunity to look at the request. I don't want it to say anything about that until we've heard back from them. And we have several hundred members of Parliament to contact, so it's a process that will it's going to take a while. We plan on contacting all the members of Parliament, so it'll be 9 months, this entire campaign. Does that answer your question?
Yes, I'm sorry, I'm getting a lot of static on my line, so I was having a
I was a bit too.
Okay, I'm actually clearer now, but yeah, that's a very interesting answer, because the other comment I had just too was just what you were saying earlier about, see, I have a radically different perspective from this, from Chris on this, in terms of, like, I don't think that, I don't think I know who did it. I mean, I certainly have my suspicions, and I certainly, I feel that there are clearly have to be elements of the American government, and I mean, but I'm agnostic on the question as to who done it. But in order to prove something, or in order to get to the truth of something, I think you have to. I think this is a very reasoned approach you're taking. I think the towers, and especially Building 7, together provide the most substantive basis that's been the most clearly investigated, and it's the case where the official story is clearly a lie. So I think that's a very reasoned approach, is that if you're going to try to establish a conspiracy or an alternative theory of something, I think you have to go and you start with the foundation, with the most solid building blocks, and I think that really does involve the destruction of the towers and Building 7, because I think that anybody who examines that evidence with an open mind can't help but come to the conclusion that it's preposterous, of the official story.
Yeah.
And that's an opening to our communication to the other members of the truth movement, who may have been put off a little bit by our petition because we didn't address the other aspects of 9/11. We did that because we have one page to get one point in the middle of a busy government with a lot of business. So it's the first of the dominoes, and that's the reason why. And you said it's the most compelling evidence. It doesn't mean that there isn't more that they'll look at as a consequence, but this is where we're going to start.
So, David, will your truth actions in Ottawa on the 11th, in 3 days' time, will you be out with the petition getting signatures?
Most certainly.
Great.
Right now, it's the first signature on it will be Richard Gage's.
Wow.
The petition itself in original form has been, it's on its way to California. We're tracking it over Canada Post. It may, the original copy may not arrive exactly in time for us to have that at the Truth Action, but certainly we'll be collecting the originals of the remaining pages, and I imagine we'll get the required 25 signatures that we need in order for it to qualify to be read in Parliament within a few minutes. From then on, all the petitions that we have will be done at the Truth Actions, and all points in between. We'll be fanning this out every day of the coming 9 months until September 2011.
Yeah, because members or people who want to help, they can themselves copy the page and get signatures.
Exactly. I wanted to add one thing. One of the comments that people have about us doing it here in Canada is why. They come at it from two directions. One, if it's, the people have said it's an American problem, so why would Canada be interested in this? And furthermore, what right do they have to be interested in this? And Canadians may also say that too. Why should Canada get involved? It's an American problem. The answer to that, in my view, I don't necessarily speak for all of the people in our group, but in my view, the answer is that because we have our army in Afghanistan, and we have taken part in a multi-year, where it's 7-8 years now, invasion of Afghanistan, and we have done that based on what could very well be false information. There can be nothing more extreme than one country invading another. So that alone is sufficient reason why Canada needs to investigate this, because we are involved in a multi-year war in Afghanistan. If Canada had never invaded anybody as a result of 9/11, that point would be much weaker, and I think people would probably be much more right in questioning why we're doing this petition here in Canada. But I think it's of paramount importance that the Canadian government, even if you are very pro-military and you want to see all sorts of things happen with the Canadian military, even so, you still need to know that what you're doing for the right reason. I would not want to be the Prime Minister or the Minister of Defense, and I'd find out that my strategy was based on facts that were actually not correct in any situation. So I hope that when the members of Parliament are looking at our petition, they see the importance of making their governmental decisions based on facts, no matter what they are. So that's the reason why this particular petition is important to Canadians. And I'd like to put that out there, because there are people who are saying it's a bit, it's wrong for Canada to be bringing up this issue. And I'm looking at where we are in history right now, where we are with our current government policies, and I would say no, it's extreme importance that Canada looks into this.
Yeah, it also seems like the government is supposedly so concerned about terrorism, so don't they want to capture the terrorists? It's like the war on terror. They created, it's this monster joke that it's Muslim and Islamic extremism, and there's no evidences that it's not turned out to be the case. So there's been this great threat, and I mean, really what's been propagated is hateful against Semitic people, Muslim people, because really they've been blamed for these, and even in our society and in the U.S., how much the Muslims have been blamed for 9/11, and really it turns out there's no evidences that it was committed by Muslims. So that also has been most unfair within our society, that these people have been wrongly blamed.
Yes, and I would say, I think that's the case. But let's say that we're at the point now where we're going to investigate this. So we're going to work on the assumption that we don't know. Government is, it could be that the government is basing its policies on incorrect information, and that could raise a whole bunch of other questions about how segments of the population of Canada, visible minorities, have been treated. What does that mean for the Charter of Rights and Freedoms? What does it mean for the Canadian Constitution? What liabilities is the government incurring if its policies are actually proven to be false? So there could be huge legal implications for the government if it turns out that what it's doing is actually wrong in the factual sense. So it isn't just a military matter. It's one that relates to other policies in other aspects of what the government is doing. The government may need to change course in light of these facts. And that is something that is very relevant to Canada. So it's unbelievably important that the Canadian government looks into this. And why? And finally, why would you say no to getting more information? Better information makes for better decisions on anything, notwithstanding 9/11. This could be on any matter relating to how well the government governs. Why would they say no to getting more information? So it's clear that the reason for doing it in Canada is very compelling.
Yeah, and we are close to the Americans and, you know, being neighbors. And, it is a good place. And it needs to be a worldwide movement, too, because you see also the implications, in my view, for other NATO countries. You know, Canada's part of the NATO, and I think other populations of other countries have similarly been deceived about their involvement in Afghanistan. And people, I think, supported their military, but they don't want their military to be involved in conflicts based on deceit, as has been done.
And so, the logic, the political logic there is completely transferable, too. Like, we're talking about the nation of Canada, and we were involved and are involved in the war in Afghanistan. And it could be that we've been duped, to put it bluntly, and we need to rethink our military policy. Well, doesn't that mean that if you were in Great Britain or France or the Netherlands or any of the other countries that are involved in Afghanistan, doesn't that mean the same for you? Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I think just by talking about it from a Canadian perspective, it does two things. It makes it relevant to Canada, and as Canadians, that should be our first concern. But number two, if other countries look at what Canada is doing, they'll say, well, Canada is taking these actions. Shouldn't we consider taking those actions, too? If they are doing it, shouldn't we be doing it, especially if our militaries are involved? And again, why would you make any decision, forgetting about 9/11, why would you make any decision not in possession of all the facts? So again, having these commissions all around the world will enable governments everywhere to make smarter and better decisions, and that's something that they ought to do, regardless of what their policies are. They need more information to make better decisions.
And it's also widely known, even among the military, that you know, there's question of this. Like, you know, it's not that the people in the military don't know. But yeah, I guess they feel loyalty, and you know, it's awkward for them. But in a way, it's not fair to them. You know, it's not, you know, they see their comrades killed over there and disabled and such, and
well, you know, I'm ex-military myself too. And what I would add to that is, you know, Canada has had a proud military history. It was Canadian soldiers that fought at Vimy Ridge that turned the course of World War I. We took Vimy Ridge when no other country could. The French couldn't do it. The British couldn't do it. It was the Canadians that did that. We fought alongside the Americans in World War II. We hit the beaches in Normandy together. Over 20,000 Canadians fought in Vietnam as volunteers. They weren't drafted. They volunteered to go. When I was in the Governor General's Foot Guards, we had one of the last, it wasn't one of the last, but he had been in Vietnam, and he was still serving in our unit here in Ottawa. Mm-hmm. What I wanted to state, the reason why this is important for Canada, is that Canadians in blue helmets have had the most difficult military battles to fight in peacekeeping. And we've stood in between the Turks and the Greeks in Cyprus. Canadian soldiers have defended the Croatians and kept them separated from the Serbs in Bosnia. And they've served in the Golan Heights between keeping the Arabs away from or separated from the Israelis. And the most challenging assignments for soldiers are to stand in between two armies and keep the peace. And Canada has a 40 or 50-year history of doing this. Lester Pearson, one of our former Canadian prime ministers, won the Nobel Prize for his peacekeeping efforts. So why shouldn't Canada be the first nation to bring forward this important issue relating to 9/11 for the purposes of keeping the peace? And, you know, I think that, you know, we are a representative nation as a military power because of the track record that we have. And if we can bring our Canadian way of respect and settlement and understanding to the battlefield, which is something that we have excelled at, I think it makes a lot of sense that Canada should be the first country to open this type of investigation. And it won't stop the fact that we have a military partnership with the United States. Like I said, we fought side by side in many battles for great purposes with the Americans, and I'm sure we still will continue to do that. But we can also influence the way things go as Canadians, and we ought to do that. We've done that in the past, and in some ways this is business as usual for us Canadians, is looking into these difficult questions involving war and resolution. That's what Canadians are good at. So to me, it makes a lot of sense that we would be the first country to bring this up.
Yeah, well, I mean, my personal viewpoints is that the government knows perfectly well who did 9/11 because they're controlled by the same groups of people who did it, and they know who those people are. But that's my personal opinion, and you know, you have a very different attitude. And now I think we have to look back and really question Canada's involvement in the UN, because more and more we're seeing the corruption of the UN, and we need to question that, and the corruption of NATO. I think we serve our military because we want our military to be informed and the public to be informed about these events. And I think that's what's most important. You know, we, the public, like, we have a right to know the truth of these things.
It's true. And the corruption you're talking about, I'm not so much of an expert in that. But what I would just say I'm confident in is the basic good values of all Canadians. Like I said, I've been a soldier, and I know that the majority of Canadians are peaceful people, and we support ethics and principle even in battlefield situations. I know that because that's how soldiers are trained in the Canadian Armed Forces. So could it be that the world is tired of George Bush's way of having military affairs done preemptively and aggressively? Maybe it's time that the world needs to shift course and say, okay, well, now we need to, you know, we all agree collectively as nations that we need to have a different way that we look at military affairs. And perhaps Canada can set the tone. I don't think Canada is in a position to tell anybody what to do, and certainly those people thinking that any Canadian 9/11 Truth Commission would be telling any other country what to do, that's actually old think. I think that countries, when they try and force each other to do things, it only creates one outcome, which is war. But I think by setting an example and showing people why through example is something that can be very influential. And I think that that's actually a better way that countries should start communicating with each other, and it just makes sense. So in that light, Canada could be a great leader in this. And the more I think about it, the more I think that having the first, maybe of many, 9/11 Truth Commissions, it could very well start in Canada, and it makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, there really needs to be an international body, in a way, investigated, I think. I don't know how that could come about. But, you know, another good aspect of your petition is, again, though, to make people aware of the issues and how we've not been told the truth, and you know, about these things. And I think that's really important, because it's also continuing to wake people up to that, you know, these are unsolved thorns in our side. You know, we have an elephant in the room. You know, this huge event, the defining event of this millennia so far, and there's these huge issues about it. And people need to be aware of that because it ties into a lot of other things happening around them in our society today.
You know, in the last few days, when people have started asking me, and when we made the announcement of the petition, they've said, well, where are you going with this? And I've actually started to move beyond, in the last few days, the need to convince people about 9/11. Because, it, as you say, it's an elephant in the room. For me, it's so obvious that to even question it, it's like it's questioning the sky's blue. So these days, if I run into somebody who's still questioning or saying that the official story is true, I don't even bother to argue with them anymore. I see that as a waste of my time. Mm-hmm. Because what I'm asking myself now is, you know, this is interesting, a 9/11 Truth Commission in Canada. What does that mean for Canada? Does it mean that Canada's place in history and the world could be changing? Could it be that the trend for this nation is, you know, what's the trajectory for Canada now that this is happening? And I'm seeing that, depending on how things go, it could be very good for Canada. It could mean that our growing significance as a nation and our importance as a people. Why shouldn't we speak on important issues to the international stage? I think Canada has conducted itself as a nation very well over many issues. And we have a lot of things that we've achieved here. You mentioned... I think you were talking at the beginning of the show just about human affairs and, you know, social issues, you know, possibly even things like healthcare. Canada, a long time ago under Tommy Douglas, created universal healthcare. It's something that we have just as an assumption here in Canada, but in other countries it's not the case. It's been a major debate in the United States, whereas we're past the debate. So, you know, again, coming back to this point that I'm thinking now down the road, past 9/11 truth. I'm past convincing people about this or even seeing the need for it. I'm seeing this as a finished problem, and now I'm looking ahead saying, well, what does 9/11 truth mean for Canada? I think what it means is Canada should grow as a nation on its own, and it should start speaking out and communicating in productive ways to other nations, and I think in bringing this message to members of Parliament, if we can get them to start to see that they have a role now as leaders of an important country, one that is setting the way in which the people of the world want to go, I think that if they can start to see themselves as aligning with this new trend where people are much smarter about what governments are doing, they're much more savvy, they're much less able to be fooled. We could have a new set of government policies, ones that would resonate with the people of Canada and ones that would resonate with people with the world. And it could start with transparency. It could start with different types of military endeavors, ones that are based on benefits to the world community. There's so many other aspects of so many things in the world that if they were looked at from a Canadian way, they would get better. It starts with looking at this petition and what it's saying and making realistic policies. And if there are some MPs that we can convince of that, then this thing is definitely going to go.
Well, it's a valuable effort, and I'd encourage people to go to your website. It's at truthactionottawa.com, and you'll find the petition from there.
Yeah, it's right on the front page. You can go to truthactionottawa.com and click on the petition. The direct page is truthactionottawa.com/petition.
Okay, and hopefully we'll get tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of signatures.
Yeah, we have nine months. I haven't set any limits to how many signatures we'll get, you know, but we're going to work as hard as we can every day for the next 9 months.
Yeah, and people can get copies of the petition within their group and then send it in to you, because I think that's really useful to do. You know, people just pick up on it, and even in their circles, get people to sign it.
Absolutely. I mean, you could be in northern Manitoba, Charlottetown, New Brunswick, Cold Lake, Kelowna. You could be anywhere in Canada, and you could print out one page of this petition. You've got 9 months. Collect 25 signatures and just mail it to our address on the website. You've just helped the petition. You've done a great thing. And it's not hard. You'd simply start the conversation and say, here, would you help out and sign the petition? And
it's empowering in ways. Eh? It's empowering to do something, even if that's just sign the petition. Like, come on, people, wake up. You know, what's happening to our country is terrible. You know,
and
we
it's
need people to be responsible.
If it goes where I think it's going to go, if your name is on that, your name could be on one of the most significant documents in history. You know, it would be like saying I was there when, you know, maybe I'm on my soapbox a little bit now, but all it cost you was 10 seconds to put your name and address on this thing, we're working very hard on this, and it could be that you could say, I signed on to Martin Luther King the day he gave his great speech in Washington. I mean, I don't know if it would be...
To be a part of history, though, you're saying.
Could be.
Like,
it would cost you five or 10 seconds of your time, and you could say, it started here. You could say to your kids, it started here in Canada, and I signed that. If it were me, I don't know if I would believe that or not, but if you're only asking me for 5 seconds of my time, I would do it.
And you guys will be out on the street this in 3 days' time and with your petition, so that's really good. And we'll have to have you back at a later point, David. I notice we're coming to the end of the first hour here, David, so need to just finish up. This has been David Long from Truth Action Ottawa. Thank you very much, David. And we didn't get time to talk at all about your experience in New York on that day. I hope we can get you back at some point, David.
Sure, I'll be happy to.
And we'll do a follow-up on your petition.
Could I quickly point something out, another angle on all of this? You're also dealing with an unsolved mass murder that, you know, involve Canadian citizens, to answer your question about Canadian involvement, and it involves other countries too. But it's an unsolved mass murder. Over 3,000 people were murdered.
Including 25 Canadians, I think it was.
And so it's like, it's, you know, we look at it, I think, primarily as this political event, but it was a mass murder, and it has not been solved.
Yeah. Wow.
The crime scene.
Yeah, you're right, eh? Yeah,
you're right.
To go to the RCMP.
International Police Forces should, you know, it's an unsolved crime that's the way I look at it.
Wow, that's really excellent. That's really powerful to realize. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Well, thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks,
yeah, thank you, David, and good luck to you guys. Truth Action Ottawa, out in the streets of Ottawa there, Amir and Leon and Mark and all of you fellows. Okay, I hope to be out with you.
Yeah, we'll see you there.
Okay, goodbye, David.
Bye.
Okay, so we're going to have a break for 5 minutes, and I've asked BBS to set up the song, which I often have played for my intermission. It's called Sacred Land, and it's by Native Canadian Robin. Okay, thank you.
I remember all the stories my grandpa used to tell about a time in this sacred land. The buffalo did roam out on the open plain. The eagle soared high up in the sky. There wasn't any pain. yes, he said, they were so very proud. They lived a simple life. Mother Nature did provide. There was no law, but there was no crime. He brought his whale up. Nothing's been the same the day the white man came. Yes, they brought their whiskey and they brought their gun. They took away our land. They put us on the run. Locked us on this reservation. Changed our ways of life. Promises were made, but they were only lies. The nations, they will rise. All the chiefs from long ago, they will be by your side. Into the battleground, a warrior you will ride. Armed with years of wisdom, many years of pride. The day the white man came, he brought his whale alive. Nothing's been the same the day the white man came.
Well, that was by Robin, a friend out Western Canada. Thank you, Robin. Sacred Land. Very beautiful piece. Okay, for the second half of our show, I have Toronto area activist Dee Nicholson. And Dee's specialty is in health freedom and health-related issues as pertaining to current legislation in Canada and the U.S., as well as she keeps abreast of most of what's happening. And welcome, Dee.
Thank you, Christopher. Good to be here.
Happy New Year. I hope this is a year where we just have to have more mass awakening. I don't see alternatives to that. It seems so much to come back to the importance of people waking up and taking responsibility.
Yeah, and the effects of the paradigm that everybody's under, you know, this idea you can't fight City Hall. People are kind of staring like deers in the headlights, looking at what's coming like a steamroller, and they're going, oh my, you can't fight City Hall, look what's coming, and they're sitting there in a stupor. And a lot of people would just rather ignore it and go about their merry way than try and deal with it because it's so overwhelming. I mean, you were just talking about 911. Well, I had a client who was living a block down the street, down Liberty Street from the World Trade Center, and although she wasn't in the World Trade Center or on her way there, she was close enough that she was bombed out of her apartment.
Wow.
And she spent 4 hours hiding in the basement, and
wow,
then she had to walk wearing flip-flops and a tank top because she was at home looking for work on her computer, saw this massive cloud rolling towards
wow
her and ran. The windows were blown in. The Venetian blinds were destroyed. Everything in her apartment was destroyed, and her building later had to come down. So she never got her apartment back. She lost everything, and then she got cancer from being exposed.
Oh, dear.
So, I mean, we're talking about something. Here we are 10 years later, 10 years down the pike.
Yeah.
And what have we got? We've got sick people. We've got governments having to be monkey wrenched into a position where they take care of the first responders. We've got questions abounding of what happened to all the gold that moved out of there. What about Larry Silverstein, who bought the building and just insured it just before the thing went down? What about the put options? What about the horse shit they were talking about? What brought the buildings down and all that kind of, I mean, it's still there.
Yeah.
And people still in the States, they don't want to look at it in any real sense. Like in Canada, and you mentioned I'm in health freedom, yes. But I'm really in freedom. That's the whole deal, is the freedom to choose what we do. If we are in a democracy where everybody gets a vote, and if we are in a free society where everybody gets to do what they want to do as long as they do no harm, which is really universal law, okay, do no harm to anyone, including yourself, and your life will be fine. Okay, well, we're living in a situation now where we're fed all these lies, and we're having to try and cope, and our normality is vastly disappearing. Normality is going out the window, and people are just, they're in a shell shock state, and they still are, and I think it's worse, it's even deeper 10 years later. That's where I think we're at.
I think the wrong assumption you have is that we're in the democracy, because now we're kind of waking up and realize that
our
political parties have been hijacked, essentially.
Uh-huh. Well, I said if, didn't I, Christopher?
Oh, yes,
I said,
you did.
If we're in a democracy. We aren't. We're in fascism. We're in techno-feudalism. I heard that phrase used a few weeks ago.
Techno-feudalism.
And it absolutely fits. Techno-feudalism.
Yeah.
Because essentially, if you wanted to compare feudalism to what we have today, well, in feudalism, you were given the opportunity, in quotes, to work the land that belonged to a noble. He would give you 10% of your crop and then tax you on that 10%. Now, where is there a difference now between the average office employee whose work creates probably 10 times what they get paid for, and then they get taxed on that? Where's the difference? The only difference is it's not the noble who's taxing you, it's the government, who is at arm's length the agent of the corporation.
Well, that's what's happened, yes.
You can see all the
legislation that's brought through Parliament. It's not legislation in the healthcare area. It's not that serves Canadians' health and well-being. Instead, it propagates this corporate agenda. Bring us under the thumb of these international, the pharmaceutical mafia, the Monsantos, and I mean the government never makes decisions for the people. In my view, I can't ever remember them doing it. It's like,
I don't
like
see any.
Sorry?
I mean, I've been around on this planet for more than a half a century, and damn it, I've never seen the government do anything for the sake of the people. I have seen them label lots of things as for the good of the people, and you've brought up an interesting point, because you may recall, because I know you're on my email list, you may recall that I sent around last year some responses that I got from the Minister of Justice, Rob Nicholson, no relation, thank God. But at any rate, he sent around letters when we were all screaming about C-6 and C-36 in terms of its constitutional violations and the rights violations within it. His standard response was, your rights are subject to interpretation. Well, that is a direct hook to the notwithstanding clause in our Bill of Rights. The notwithstanding clause, which aficionados of masonry will notice is clause 33, and they will notice that that has particular significance, but it's like when they say your rights are subject to interpretation, the only grounds given under the Constitution or the Bill of Rights for the abrogation of our rights is public safety. And so you will notice that everywhere they talk about public safety, you're going to notice that your rights are going bye-byes. first of all, was the Patriot Act, was to secure America. Okay, so the Patriot Act and C-16, which was our corresponding legislation here, both of them took away certain rights. They reinterpreted our rights on the basis of safety and security. Now you see things like you can get groped for going on a plane. You can get backscatter radiation just to go on a plane. Okay, and this is for your so-called safety. And look what they used for a hook on that, a guy who couldn't even properly blow up his own shorts.
I mean, it was one of their staged events to sell their machines and to bring it in. Just like the shoe bomber, and then everybody's got to take their shoes off. Like, it's totally Hollywood.
Hollywood. Right now, Sun TV is rolling a movie I know everybody is familiar with. It's called Spaceballs. You remember that movie with John Candy? This movie that they're running on Sun TV right now is just as much of a caricature of what government is and what all these machinations are as our actual government. It's like I'm going, holy smokes, somebody couldn't write a comedy better than this.
So we have Spaceballs in Ottawa.
Oh, big time. Big time. And a lot of hot air and a lot of bad gas. You know, I mean, it's really, really ridiculous when you look at how our health system is run. Health Canada considers pharma a client of theirs. Since when does an agency of the government have a client? Since when?
Well, probably in Canada for about 50 years.
Exactly. And the other thing that we're wondering about is Health Canada, of course, was formed as an advisory agency to gather international information and feed it to the provinces, which have ultimate control constitutionally over health care.
Oh.
So when exactly and by what mandate did Health Canada become a regulatory agency? By what mandate? They're practicing medicine without a license in Ottawa, and they know they are. And in the meantime, they are servicing, by virtue of the fact that Health Canada employees go work for pharma after they quit Health Canada, and pharma representatives go and work for Health Canada after they stop working for pharma. Essentially, what is happening is Health Canada has become an agency of the pharmaceutical industry. And there's no question of that. Furthermore, they are exceeding their mandate by foisting all this pharma stuff on us. I mean, right now, you may have heard in the past week or so, the FDA in the States is going after intravenous vitamin C, which people who are in the health field, in the natural health field, know is one of the most effective ways of warding off anything, including cancer, because it alkalizes your system, and alkalization means potential hydrogen. pH stands for potential hydrogen. When you've got high potential hydrogen in your system, you have oxygenation, and oxygen destroys cancer and prevents it from existing. So why are they removing these things from the market? When you look, everything that Health Canada removes from the market and prevents us from having is something that has an absolutely stellar record of reversing disease conditions, an absolutely stellar condition. And so when you look at what Health Canada is doing, what they've done is essentially they have handed all of the regulatory function of their agency over to the direction of the pharmaceutical industry. And now they say only a drug can cure a disease. Therefore, if you make a claim such as water can treat dehydration, which is a medical condition, now you've made a claim for water. And if you make a claim for water, that turns it into a drug. So when they raided the Marigold Pharmacy, a compounding pharmacy out which deals in natural products being compounded to order for naturopaths.
When was this?
This was just a few months ago out in Courtney, B.C. And they raided the place, and you can go online and on the government website, you can see the list of products that they removed from Marigold Compounding Pharmacy. They included such things as tea tree oil, lavender oil, sage oil. These are the things they included. and they are claiming that these are dangerous products. I'm going, excuse me? Lavender is dangerous? Lavender oil? They think some kid's going to consume it. Well, I can't imagine any child taking more than a drop of lavender oil, which, by the way, is added to some gourmet foods, okay, because it is food quality and it is not toxic. But I can't imagine anybody guzzling it down. Can't imagine it. Same with oregano oil. They didn't want the guy selling oregano oil either. All of these things we know to be really good antiseptics, antivirals, antibacterials. They're all disappearing, and they're under threat. And one thing that's really interesting is I'm noticing a burgeoning of private buyers clubs. For example, Miracle Mineral Supplement, which is actually sodium chlorite, it's a common enough compound, but it is one of the most important cleansers for the body. It'll get anything out of your body that shouldn't be there. Heavy metals, you name it. It'll get everything out of your body. It's extremely cheap. It's $20 for one
what
person.
Is this?
Miracle Mineral Supplement.
Oh, yeah.
It's known as MMS, okay? And it might sound a little airy-fairy, but I tell you, when you look at the anecdotal evidence from the people who have tried it, I know a lady who had a mouth ulcer, and she had tried for months and months and months to get rid of this thing. She took one drop of this stuff, and the very next day, the ulcer was gone.
Yeah.
And, I mean, things like honey.
Wow.
Okay,
I mean,
honey itself can be used. It's one of the finest wound healers on the planet. If
wow.
you've got a wound that isn't healing properly, you plaster it with organic honey and cover it over, and your lesion will heal. But they don't want to tell you that because that's not patentable, and that's not owned by pharma.
Yeah.
And pharma isn't going to make money from it. So this is where Health Canada has completely gone off the rails. They are not serving the people. They never have been serving the people. They've been serving pharma all along. And then you get into the legislative aspect of things. And what are they saying in some of these little rules that they're coming up with? Well, the last one that we were fighting, which passed, unfortunately, as predicted, just before Christmas, and over which, in the form of C6, Parliament was prorogued, there's a backdoor clause in there, and this is where I'd like to take this little conversation so that people understand what has just been done to us. C-36 has a clause in it that allows for Health Canada to accept direction from foreign governments. And their definition in the legislative summary of foreign governments includes groups of nations. And groups of nations would include trade groups, okay? So that means that Codex Alimentarius, which is down the road but nonetheless coming, is something that Health Canada has just mandated itself through Bill C-36 to accept when it comes in. Even though they say C-36 doesn't apply to natural health products, it applies to the agency that controls them. And if the agency that controls them has to take direction from foreign governments, it doesn't matter what our legislation says. Then you look at S-510, Senate Bill 510, the Food Safety Modernization Act. Now, bear in mind, C-36 was called the Consumer Product Safety Act. Okay, safety, both in the same type of legislation, the word safety on either side of the border. What does the Food Safety Modernization Act include? Well, it includes a backdoor clause, just like the one in C-36, almost identical. And then you hear about the Comprehensive Economic and Trade Agreement, which is a biggie between Canada and the EU, which they expect to have signed by the end of the year. Now, that particular piece of garbage essentially makes us vulnerable because it talks about harmonizing everything, okay, makes us vulnerable to the European Union food safety directives, which we have ignored as activists for a very long time because we never saw the mechanism by which it could be applied to Canada. And it is Codex's evil twin. The guidelines that are placed in the EU food safety directive, ask any European what they can get over there right now. I mean, I have a friend who came and visited from Norway a little while back. He went back with over $1,000 worth of supplements that he could not get in Norway because of the EU food safety directives. And these can be now applied to us. This is what's scary. Because of that backdoor clause, they can be applied to us. Now, Jonathan Emord, who is a lawyer who has beaten the FDA in court 7 times, he's known as the FDA Dragon Slayer. Okay, he came out with information showing that S510 has the same backdoor clause. Now, what have you got? You've got Harper and Obama and the Mexican, what's his name, Vicente Fox?
Calderon.
Calderon, he's the new guy, yeah. Calderon. They've got the three, and they're agreeing on the North American Perimeter Security and Safety Agreement, which is basically going to put a security perimeter around all of our countries. Now, on the face of that, that might seem a decent idea to protect North America with combined resources. It sounds good on the surface. But when you dig into that, gee, what do you find? Consumer product safety. And harmonizing of consumer product safety. What the hell is that doing in a Border Security Act? But it's there. It's there. So what you've got is you've got all the mechanisms now in place by which the EU food safety directives can be slammed on us in a hot hurry.
Yeah.
Now, there's another little twist that has come down the pike, and this is just recently. Just before Christmas, it was December 22nd, okay? Just before Christmas, preventing everybody from having any kind of a real discussion on it. We were given the guidelines from Health Canada that said that as of March 1st, no more natural product numbers will be issued except if you've already got an application in. So they gave them a deadline. Then they said that after March 1st, only products that have an EN, which means an exemption number because they're being considered, or a natural product number, which means they've been approved for distribution. Only those products may be sold, but until September, you can sell off existing stock of non-compliant stuff. Okay, now, right after Christmas, they send out another notice. The second notice says, we're delaying the deadlines indefinitely. Well, indefinitely could mean 2 weeks, 6 weeks, 6 months, or 6 years. We don't know what it means. But here they are, and they're withdrawing those deadlines so that they can meet with a committee and take recommendations on standards of evidence. And I'm going, hang on here. That is a really phony excuse. And what are they actually doing? So this is speculation on my part, okay? I want to tell everybody in advance. This is, I'm speculating here, so don't take this for gospel. But I think that this is a really, really solid bit of reasoning. It costs them a lot of money to go raiding. And we know they go raiding. They raid pharmacies, like compounding pharmacies. They raid health food stores. They withdraw stock. They go in SWAT style. We've talked about this before, you and I. But the thing is that if they're saying they're delaying it, what my spidey senses are telling me is that they are waiting for the CETA trade agreement to be signed. Because at that point, they can immediately slam us with the EU food safety directives, and then they only have to raid once. If they raid on their own standards, they'll be raiding again, and it costs them millions to do that. So I think this is a cost-saving measure. They're delaying it until they get the EU food safety directives slammed on us, and then they'll go down, and they will literally be destroying our natural health industry. Yeah. And I mean taking it apart with one fell swoop. This is the World Trade Center of the natural health industry right here. We are looking at the wires are in place now. That building is going to go down anytime. And this is what we're up against. And so I'm telling people, look, you've got all kinds of connections now. I just sent out, I don't know if you got it yet, but I sent out an email yesterday that shows all the connections between the multinational corporations and the organic food suppliers. And let me tell you, was I shocked when I found my favorite Cashew cereal is owned by Kellogg's. Okay, green and black organic chocolate. You know, everybody loves organic dark chocolate. It's so good for you. Green and Black is owned by Cadbury's. Cadbury's is on the CFR. You see what I'm saying? So all of these things are being adulterated. They're being bought up. They're being usurped. And they're being controlled by multinationals. And these multinationals, yeah. You want to go back to Agenda 21, they're trying to kill us.
Yeah, that seems most apparent to me. Every time I go outside and see the chemtrails all through the sky, and I mean, it's hard to comprehend, but I totally agree. You know, it's Agenda 21. It's
absolutely. Absolutely. There's no question. I mean, 10 years ago, people like you and me were talking about Agenda 21, and people look at us like we had three heads. And now there's enough evidence out there that a lot of people are saying, wow, you told me. And I'm going, yeah, I told you so. But don't, you know, ask me, do I get any pleasure from that? Does anybody realize how happy I would be to be wrong?
Yeah.
Man, I would love to be wrong. I would so love to be wrong. But I'm not. That's the problem. I'm not, and I know I'm not.
I know. I feel the same way. I think Jim differs in his view, but it's really quite horrifying. I mean, to me, I see it the same way. There are these people. They even make all these statements publicly. Like Gates actually gives a lecture about his new about the threat of overpopulation. But if he's able to do his inoculation program in Africa, that can help reduce it by 10% or something.
Exactly.
Like, where he's obviously saying that his inoculations are going to lead to population reduction in Africa. And he says this publicly. It's on YouTube.
I know. I've shared that with a lot of people, and they go, what?
It's shocking. Yes.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is a guy. This is a guy who, along with his buddy from Virgin, okay, what's his name? That the guy who owns Richard Branson, who owns Virgin and all the Virgin companies. He has set up, and I mean, I laughed when I heard this because it's really kind of, it's kind of funny to picture. But what he's done is he's set up a herd of nurses who ride motorcycles and reach remote African communities with vaccines. I mean, this is something straight out of the Constant Gardener, but, you know, it slides by people because they think of things at such arm's length they don't realize.
Why does Bill Gates in Africa?
Sorry, I didn't quite catch that, Jim.
Why does Bill Gates give money to fight AIDS in Africa?
Because AIDS is a fraud, and because if you've watched The Constant Gardener, you see what they do with Africans. They are testing things. They're wiping people out over there. Those are the most useless of the useless eaters, the starving people of the world. Look at what they're doing to India. Look at how India is suffering right now under the BRAI, and now they want a CETA treaty between the EU and India. Canada goes over there and opens asbestos mines. They can't do here because it's toxic, but they can do it to India.
Well, let's stay with one thing at a time. Jim was saying about AIDS. I mean, what I understand about AIDS is it was designed in one of their biological weapons labs. That's my understanding.
Well, that's a possibility. I mean, it's not proven, but it's a strong possibility. The thing is that regardless of what was produced where, the bottom line is that people who have stayed away from the standard AIDS treatment are not only healthy and alive today, they're also clear, because the immune system crashes from different lifestyle elements. And when it crashes, you're going to get the same kind of conditions that you get with AIDS. Your organs fail, your immune system is down, any kind of an infection can kill you. These are immune problems. And of course, that's acquired immune deficient. Okay, there's your AIDS right there. So if you treat it as an immune deficiency, instead of feeding it full of toxic drugs that are going to kill you, and bear in mind AZT, the premier drug that they used, is actually a chemo drug that was invented back in the 60s and was rejected because of its toxicity, given in short bursts 3 months apart. And they're feeding AIDS patients this stuff on a daily basis. So people are coming in taking toxicity that was rejected for cancer treatment because of its toxicity levels.
Wow.
Now all of a sudden it's okay to give to AIDS patients. Now give me a break.
What if, well, my understanding, I think it's rather well documented, is that AIDS has ravaged sub-Saharan Africa. That pretty
immune
much
crashes have, yes. Immune crashes have ravaged sub-Saharan Africa because nobody is giving them what they need. Clean water, sanitation, good food, and good shelter. That's what people need. Florence Nightingale proved that and blew the hell out of Louis Pasteur's germ theory, which he debunked himself on his deathbed. Pasteurization is bunkum. It's complete bunkum, and Pasteur, who invented it, said so before he died. Florence Nightingale proved that cleanliness and good diet would cure smallpox or anything else, and she blew the socks off that 20 years before Pasteur came out of it. Then you have the guy who invented vaccinations, so-called Dr. William Jenner. He bought his medical license for £18. He never was a doctor. He was just a mad scientist. He killed his own son with his vaccinations. Vaccinations caused so much damage in the original years, in the first years, that the British, newly formed British Medical Association, made a concentrated effort to cover up the damage so that they could use vaccination to control the medical cartel, which then got completely formalized in 1897 by none other than John D. Rockefeller. Okay, Rockefeller already had the oil and gas cartel. He liked that so much, in 1897, he hired a guy by the name of Fred Tapsfield. Tapsfield went around, and he promoted the American Medical Association and all the white-coated authorities to the point where every civic board had a doctor on it. Every committee had a doctor on it. You see how it was done? And they basically conned everybody into thinking that just because a guy has a white coat and a membership in an AMA, that makes him smart.
Well, I mean, it does in a way, because it's not easy to get a medical degree. And I mean, it's not, the problem isn't in having a medical association. The problem is having doctors on boards, which I would think in many circumstances is useful. But the problem is that both of those became so corrupted and then under the corporate interests. I mean, that's the problem.
If you look at our parliament, how many lawyers are sitting in parliament? What's the percentage of lawyers that are working in Parliament? What's the percentage of doctors? We've got lots of doctors in Parliament. We've got lots of lawyers in Parliament. We've got lots of bank executives and finance executives. And interestingly enough, there are a few particular professions that are causing us damage, and lawyering is one of them, religion is another, and medicine is a third, okay? These guys get paid whether they screw up or not. Since when do you or I get to go out and do something for somebody else, screw it up, and they pay us? Since when?
Well, I mean, there's a lot thrown in there.
No kidding.
Yeah.
No kidding. I mean, that bears a lot of thought.
We do see how the medical training has been completely taken over by the pharmaceutical industry.
Oh, yeah.
Don't get any adequate training in nutrition and health methods. And we do see this repression of natural.
Yeah. 7 hours of nutrition in 7 years of education. 7 hours. And then they feed you drugs and treat symptoms, not causes, and cut-slash-burn poison. That's their only way of dealing with it. And everything that they treat you with stops a symptom. And every time the body is stopped from expressing a symptom, it moves that symptom somewhere else. These are known as side effects. And this is why drugs have side effects, because they stop symptoms, not causes. They cannot cure anything except by blasting it out and making it look like you're cured. However, the cause, the original cause, is never treated. So, for example, breast cancer, ravaging disease, horrible disease. okay, caused basically by nutritional deficiency, treatable entirely by nutritional supplementation, okay, treated properly by assessing the body and what it needs and giving it what it needs. Okay, what do? Cut, burn, or poison. They either cut it out, or they burn it out with radiation, or they poison it with chemotherapy. And what happens? Well, they're not dealing with the fact that, cancer starts with from an acidic body that is loaded with toxins. And where these toxins collect, the cells in that area start to morph and change in order to survive. It's a survival mechanism. It's not really a disease at all. And it's certainly not viral. But the bottom line is that they do everything wrong, like breast cancer, okay? I have a friend, the one who got breast cancer from being next to the World Trade Center. She got breast cancer. She had a lump removed and a couple of lymph node removed. And then what do? They give her a drug called tamoxifen, which is what they give all women after breast surgery of any kind, lumpectomy or mastectomy. They give them tamoxifen. Well, what's the deal with tamoxifen? Read the label. It says may cause breast cancer. Now, what kind of an idiot takes a drug that can cause the very disease they just got rid of? What kind of an idiot prescribes that to somebody? And yet they do it wholesale. And, I have another friend whose daughter is now going through the lumpectomy and lymphectomy, and they're going to try and stick her on tamoxifen. It's the least needed drug on the planet. What you need to do is you need to nutritionally treat things like cancer, not cut slash burn. Surgery is almost never necessary, and it's the most dangerous thing you can do to cancer because once you cut, okay, and I don't care how careful you are, even a needle biopsy is going to be able to move cancer cells to somewhere else, and these are rotting cells.
Into the bloodstream.
They get into the bloodstream, and then they settle somewhere else. And bingo, bango, you got it popping up. And how many times have we heard, well, I was clear for 20 years and now the cancer's back? Well, no kidding, because they never got rid of it. They got rid of the symptom of it. That's all they got rid of. They didn't get rid of the reason for it. They got rid of the symptom of it. And where natural health treats causes, okay, natural health treats causes. Allopathic medicine treats symptoms. And I maintain that if you want to do the farmer route, that's on you. That is your choice. But by God, if they're going to try and claim that we have a democracy and then turn around and take away our choice of how to treat our bodies and what to feed our bodies to keep them healthy, and we're slaves. If
well,
they're going to tell
slaves.
Us that, we are slaves. And
we
they're
are
defining
now.
It openly, yes.
I mean, we are. I mean, they're spraying us with toxins from the air, like neurotoxins and carcinogenic matter from the air.
Mycoplasma fermentans, yes, mycoplasma.
They've done it all across Canada, all out in B.C.,
everywhere.
On Victoria. Everywhere. Yeah,
it's showing up in movies now. It's showing up in movies. It's showing up
TV.
In posters. It's been normalized. Just
yes,
like
has.
you may have heard in the last couple of weeks about these new observation towers that come in on a trailer and they're setting them up in Walmart lots in the States to get people used to police surveillance while they shop.
Yeah.
If you can feature police surveillance while they shop.
Yeah.
And cameras on the street corners. We are now being observed by powers that be, and we don't know what they're using that information for. They've got facial recognition software. Now, I was just watching a Jesse Ventura episode yesterday, which, by the way, it appears that unless somebody's embedded it in their site, you can only get it now on YouTube. But it's still there. And, I mean, they're basically talking about how everything is being normalized. They're putting military in situations so people get used to seeing guns. You look in the airport, especially in Heathrow in London. I mean, I was there back in 85, 86. And even in 85 and 86, they had guys with guns. I remember walking down one aisleway in Heathrow and looking as a door, a very unobtrusive, plain, unmarked door opened to my right, and it was about 5 feet from me, so it kind of startled me when it opened. So I looked, and inside there is what looked like a hockey dressing room with a bench down low and kind of locker-type situation above, and there's a bunch of guys in SWAT team outfits lining those walls back in 85. Okay, back in 1970, I was then married to a draft dodger. And they were harassing us. We were living in Vancouver, which was noted for grabbing draft dodgers off the street and dumping them over the border at Bellingham, where they'd be grabbed and taken down to Fort Ord in California and processed as criminals. Okay, so we're living in Vancouver. I had just had my first daughter. She was about maybe a month old. And they were stealing documents out of our house. They had our phone tapped, and we were being followed. So I complained to then Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau by special delivery double registered letter. Within a week, all RCMP files on draft dodgers were returned to Ottawa and destroyed. However, at that point, we were freaked out. We had a baby, okay, a very young infant. And we were being harassed, and we were frightened. So we piled ourselves into our car and drove back to Winnipeg, where I'm from, with just the kid and whatever we could carry. And they lost us for a while because we had friends pack up our house and send it later. And they lost us for a while. Then I hear from my father-in-law, who lived in Cincinnati, that the FBI had paid him a visit, and they had a, this is, bear in mind, this is 1970. You think this hasn't been going on for a while, okay? They had a 3-inch thick file on him, and they had an 1-inch thick file on me going back to kindergarten, and I'm a Canadian.
Well, I went, what they got now.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. They look up my name, and you put my name through on Google, you find about 10 pages of links. What have they got on me? I don't even want to think about it, and I sure as hell don't want to go on a plane.
Hey, it's so funny, D.A. It's like all these police services and all this security, and the whole time the whole thing is a fraud, and then they make no effort to catch a real terrorist. Like they can't solve 9/11. Yeah, they are the
terrorists. They hire some guy. Somebody hired some guy to blow up his own shorts. Now I don't know how they convinced the guy. Must have been absolutely nuts to try and blow up his own shorts.
And he was waved through security by someone, and the whole thing, they had someone on the airplane videotaping him. The whole thing was a farce.
Oh, yeah.
It was just one of their false flag things to sell their scanners. I mean,
oh, yeah, and all the Walmart people in the States, all the Walmart people are going, ooh, gotta get secure, gotta get secure. And as Ben Franklin said, those who trade liberty for security deserve neither.
Yeah, it's like there's a mass hypnosis, and it, the kind of fear is propagated, and there's so many billions spent in security and all these things that they institute, but they never capture any of the criminals who really are committing these acts against us.
I mean God,
it's a joke.
God help me if Health Canada doesn't protect me from the ravages of vitamin C. Give me a break.
God help you if Health Canada approves a UN inoculation for their next flu.
Well,
I mean, that's part of the problem, isn't it, of what you described in those bills.
Exactly, and you will notice that what they're screaming about over in Britain right now, they're calling the swine flu. Well, guess what they vaccinated for last year? Where do you think this is coming from?
Yes,
it's coming from the vaccinations. I mean, if you look... I don't know, I know you must have seen them at some point, but the Dr. Ray Abomsawin, who is with the Native Health Organization, the federal one, he did a series of charts. He compiled them from all over the world, from government sources all over the world, showing the lack of effectiveness of vaccines. And in every case of a vaccine development, in every single case, the disease that they created the vaccine for was in a state of rapid natural decline, and then they brought in the vaccine. And one of two things happened. Either the rate of decline flattened out, meaning that it was no longer declining as much, or it actually reversed and went back up in every single case. And this is with a full range of vaccines all over the world, all charts compiled by governments themselves. Who the hell is going to debunk that? And who the hell is going to look at those charts and say vaccines work? Only an idiot, a grade 5 student, could figure out what's going on.
It's like science doesn't matter anymore, Dee. I mean, it's not science. I mean, they give us all these inoculations. They couldn't possibly have properly evaluated them, their effectiveness, because they produce them in months. So how can they tell that that's going to reduce the incidence of a certain flu?
Look at last year's H1N1. Okay, you got a situation where they were recommending, and they continue to recommend, that vaccines be given to the most vulnerable, i.e. seniors, children, and pregnant women.
Yeah.
Okay, they give it a tokenism by removing the squalene, okay, from the shot that they gave to pregnant women, replaced by mercury. Also don't recommend. I mean, don't eat the tuna because of the mercury, then they stick it in the shot.
In your bloodstream.
Yeah. Like, how dumb is that? Mm-hmm. Why aren't people connecting those dots and saying, wait a minute, you told us not to eat tuna because of the mercury, now you're giving us mercury?
People are deceived so effectively by the corporate media that they actually believe the media and their government, and they don't realize what's happened. I mean, that's the whole tragedy of it. And now
what have we
so
lost? What's the bottom line here that we've lost? As a society, we have lost critical thinking.
Mm-hmm.
We have lost critical thinking to the point where somebody comes out with it who has some kind, they've either got a white coat or a string of degrees, or they belong to government, or they belong to police authorities, or some kind of security agency. They come out and their word is God. Well, who died and made them God? And where did the people lose their ability to think things through and agree or disagree based on the truth?
After going through our educational system and watching TV for 3 hours a day.
You got it.
I mean, there's been a form of mass hypnosis. That's how
exactly.
I see it.
Exactly.
Quite frankly,
it was the same mass hypnosis that allowed the serfs of Europe to serve their masters instead of turning around saying, who the hell are you guys?
Yeah.
Where do you get off? Right? And, you know, it's like the Percy Shelley quote, rise up in unvanquishable number.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because you outnumber them. We outnumber them billions to one, and yet they intend to level their own playing field by wiping out 5.5 billion people.
Yeah.
That's what Agenda 21 calls for. That was a UN agenda in the 70s designed by none other than Henry Kissinger.
Yeah.
And then you've got Rex 84 coming into play. That was Oliver North. By the way, I met him. Oliver North designed Rex 84 for the militarization of society, and that militarization is in process now. They've got FEMA camps everywhere. If you Google FEMA camps in North America, you will find that there's practically not a square inch of U.S. territory that isn't controlled by one FEMA camp or another. And then you will see dots all over the place in Canada, and then you'll find a little note where it says NB, FEMA operations in Canada are mostly on military bases. And then you go up and look at the Meaford Tank Range. Okay, take a look at what's up there with the inward-facing barbed wire fences and the guard towers.
Oh, that's where they have an Ontario FEMA camp.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, nice area. I hope to vacation there soon.
Notice that it's right on the shore of the lake. That's one method of transportation.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, it's right on Georgian Bay, so it's got water transportation, it's got rail, it's got everything.
My gosh.
Not only that, it's right up in the area where they're running the Grand River Water Project. It's running right by there where the U.S. intends to take our water out of the James Bay Aquifer, which provides Canada with 60% of its drinking water. That's because they've polluted all theirs. you know. And then you got Maude Barlow from the Council of Canadians running around saying, is water a human right like air, or is water a commodity like Coca-Cola? And I'm going, hang on, Maudie, we like what you did with the Council of Canadians on the sovereignty issue, but when you start talking about water as a human right, we've got the water. And if the UN declares it a human right, our water's gone. We have no control over it.
Yeah. Have you heard that they are removing like a lot of water from the Great Lakes?
Of course they are. And they can because they've, you know, essentially they're sitting on them too.
Yeah.
So again, they're draining the James Bay Aquifer through the Great Lakes because that's what feeds the Great Lakes. I mean, the Great Lakes flow out to the sea. Where do you think they come from? You know, they come from the James Bay Aquifer, which tells you, by and large, it tells you that the water around the earth is not static. It's not sitting there in a bunch of bowls.
Yeah.
It's moving all the time. And which way is it moving? Well, it's moving downstream, of course, and you'll notice it's moving in the opposite direction to the way the earth is turning. So it's totally natural. Everything is gravitational. Everything is natural. And what they're doing is they're totally altering everything. Then you look at the BP oil spill and what it's done to the Gulf Stream.
Health
freedom, it's not just about health anymore.
I see it. Like, to me, I share the view with you that, you know, these people are trying to undertake population reduction, and they're spreading poisons, like, through the air, through the foods, through the water, through the electromagnetic instruments now, and HARP and such. It's terrible. I don't know what we can do to reverse the trends, but
well, I can,
it's just
I can
coming
tell
to
you,
a head somehow.
I can tell you from, you know, being a long time in the advertising and PR field myself, and this is how I have the skills to unspin the spin, because I used to write it.
I used
to write it for people, and I quit when I realized that I was basically making a living by lying to people. That's when I had to quit. I turned my skills to activism, where they've been most useful. But the thing is that I'm looking at all of this, and there is only one factor that allows this to occur. And people need to realize there is only one thing to fight, and that is their own ignorance. Because if the case of Bell, California is any indicator, when the people stand up and say no more, people go to jail. Bell, California put most of their city council in jail because they discovered corruption, and they said, no way, we're not tolerating this.
Oh, I'd never heard of that.
Yeah, well, you should Google it, because it's a real interesting story. Bell, California, B-E-L-L, okay. Just like it sounds. And they literally put everybody in jail because these guys were scamming to the tune of millions per year. Now, if we all did that, you see?
Yeah.
If we all did that, see, you know, there's this new definition of dissident that means that you are some kind of a terrorist because you disagree with the government. Okay? I don't disagree with government. I disagree with criminality in government.
Exactly.
You know,
I mean, they break all kinds of laws wantonly. I mean, Canadian government's allowing us to be sprayed with poisons. I mean,
my
community, so many people have Alzheimer's now. Like, in the States, one out of two families has a grandparent now with Alzheimer's.
I know,
they got half a million
Alzheimer's.
Autistic children from inoculations.
Exactly.
You know, it's
one
outrageous
out of
what's
now.
Been done to people.
Autism used to be 1 in 100,000. Now it's 1 in 100.
Yeah. Adeep, I noticed we're coming to an end, so I'm going to need to try to wind up a little bit. And we'll have you back through the year again, Dee, and thanks for your efforts. And we just got to keep getting the truth out there.
Yeah, we got to get people thinking, Christopher. That's the bottom line. Please, everybody, just think past your nose. If you start thinking past your nose, you will see, you will smell it, you will spot it. And when you spot it, all you have to do is say no in a group, in a large group. Everybody just say no. They have no right to do this to us. And we have every right to throw them out. And that's what we need to do, is if we're going to be governed by people who love the people.
Yeah, and maybe they can go and have some time in their FEMA camps, and we can put guard dogs around to protect the public.
Sure. They want to have. They want to have all the comforts of home.
We can give them Monsanto's food. We can feed them all, and they can get their inoculations. All IMPs can be inoculated for cervical cancer and the flu.
Absolutely, that's exactly.
I hope their karma, that's what I pray, is their karma is brought down upon them. And I hope people turn. It's madness what's happening. You know, on my website, I have pictures of Parliament Hill being chemtrailed. Well, I mean, our MPs are being chemtrailed.
They don't get it. They're so dumb. They're so dumbed down.
It's that aluminum.
Well,
okay,
when you realize it's not our government that runs us, it's the Privy Council. And who the hell is the Privy Council anyway, and when did they all get elected? Because they're not all elected.
Well,
some of them are corporate heads.
That's a really interesting aside. Someday we'll have to pick up on that.
Exactly. Who the hell are these people? And
I'm going to let you go, Dee, because we're coming down to the end. And thank you very much for filling us in, and we'll talk to you further in the year.
A pleasure,
okay.
Christopher. Thank you.
Bye, Dee.
Bye-bye.
Well, a lot going on in the world. Jim, are you there?
Yep.
We need to close down, but I thought next radio session, let's go through Beelzebub. I wanted to get back to that, and we had said we were going to do a series on that. And I have one other guest coming up, hopefully, on the book, Political Ponderology. And I think it ties into some of Gurdjieff's ideas about hus and the musses and such. So I really I hope you can try to get back into the tales a bit over the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And we'll plan for the next couple of weeks to go in that direction, and then maybe subsequently have some other guests and have a more political show again.
Okay,
so, wish you all well out there. Keep heart, have courage. We need to be learning about what's going on in our world, and we have to try to remember we have to attain our souls. It's not simply given to us, but we have to attain them by our being efforts and the effort to wake up. And the effort to awaken your heart and have feeling and compassion for other people around the world suffering through so many hardships at this time in our history. Thank you very much, Jim. Thank you, BBS Radio, and we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Okay,
goodbye.
Thanks.